changes all around, and people everywhere have seen the light in what they've found. It's a happy place in the human race, when all our lives are lived for giving. All the world for living, when love is what you find. Despair and loneliness, you've got to leave them far behind. Tell the clouds to go, let the feeling show. It's great when your life is full of living. They know to change the world, we've got to care. And people all should know, should have happened long ago. Or could it be that I just now found out? Life is meant to share, and it means the same thing everywhere. Living every day, helping people on their way.
He's more than he That this feeling's got to stay, till all the world is living, till all the world is giving, till all the world is loving every day. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is February 26, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of the website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week with our scripture reading. We're in the Gospel of John. We're going to be reading tonight in chapter 5. So the Gospel of John, chapter 5, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 5. After this there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first after the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie, and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man, when the water is troubled, to put me into the pool, but while I am coming another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed, and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day, it is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Then asked they him, What man is that which said unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward Jesus findeth him in the temple, and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The man departed, and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus, and sought to slay him, because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. But Jesus answered them, My Father worketh hitherto, and I work. Therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him, because he not only had broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. Then answered Jesus and said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself but what he seeth the Father do. For what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. For the Father loveth the Son, and showeth him all things that himself doeth, and he will show him greater works than these, that ye may marvel. For as the Father raiseth up the dead and quickeneth them, even so the Son quickeneth whom he will. For the Father judgeth no man, but hath committed all judgment unto the Son, that all men should honour the Son, even as they honour the Father. He that honoureth not the Son, honoureth not the Father which hath sent him. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that heareth my word and believeth on him that sent me hath everlasting life, and shall not come into condemnation, but is passed from death unto life. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. For as the Father hath life in himself, so hath he given to the Son to have life in himself, and hath given him authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man. Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming, in the which all that are in the graves shall hear his voice, and shall come forth, they that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation. I can of mine own self do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father which hath sent me. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. There is another that beareth witness of me, and I know that the witness which he witnesseth of me is true. Ye sent unto John, and he bare witness unto the truth. But I receive not testimony from man, but these things I say, that ye might be saved. He was a burning and a shining light, and ye were willing for a season to rejoice in his light. But I have greater witness than that of John. For the works which the Father hath given me to finish, the same works that I do bear witness of me that the Father hath sent me. And the Father himself which hath sent me hath borne witness of me. Ye have neither heard his voice at any time, nor seen his shape, and ye have not his word abiding in you. For whom he hath sent, him ye believe not. Search the Scriptures, for in them ye think ye have eternal life, and they are they which testify of me, and ye will not come to me that ye might have life. I receive not honor from men, but I know you that ye have not the love of God in you. I am come in my Father's name, and ye receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him ye will receive. How can ye believe, which receive honor one of another, and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one that accuseth you, even Moses, in whom ye trust. For had ye believed Moses, ye would have believed me, for he wrote of me. But if ye believe not his writings, how shall ye believe my words?
Okay. By the way, the queue is open, *6 and 1 to get into the queue if you're on the phone. And if you're on an app, you should have a button there to enter the queue. Terry, do we have any questions tonight?
Yeah, we've got about three or four. This one was asked. I'm getting terrible feedback somehow. This question was asked last week, but it didn't make it in time for the question section. And if a case is dismissed without prejudice and the CO period, I don't know what that abbreviation means, who the claim was against, then dissolves their business before I refile the case timely, is this considered a pending litigation?
Well, we did look at this last week. I don't particularly remember it specifically. I mean, I don't really have too much of an answer for them. I mean, again, if it's a, I don't even know what the case is about, so that may have something to do with what you can do with the case. If it was a corporation, did they say it was a corporation?
No, they didn't. Oh. Well, the CO dot might be a corporation. That might be an abbreviation for corporation. Company?
Well, the CO is really the one who runs the company. I guess, I don't know. But in any event, if the corporation, if there's people behind the corporation, you might be able to go after the individuals behind the corporation. That is kind of difficult to do, but it's not that it can't be done. I don't know the situation, what the details are. And I guess in certain cases, you can go up against the individual behind the corporation. I don't have any other answer for that. I don't know.
Okay. Here's another one. I'm getting a little bit confused. Let me go back over here.
And again, there's nobody in the queue yet, so if anybody
wants okay.
To... Go ahead, Terry.
I've got two of them. One is really off the wall, and I can't read it. Let me go back to this one. This is from Joanne. She says, I am happy to report back. All misdemeanor charges were dropped. My attorney was not willing to meet with me before the trial. Luckily, he and the judge were on my side of the alleged stalking charges. I was able to put together an affidavit quickly, as you suggested. I included on the letter no arraignment and no due process. I also included I was a living, breathing woman. My case was slated first, but they held it until last. Both my attorney and the judge treated the plaintiffs harshly. The plaintiffs were not able to put two sentences together. The plaintiff's attorney sat next to the DA and told her what to ask. My attorney objected to everything as leading the witness. The whole thing seemed to be a mock trial. I was not asked how I pled. I did not speak at all. I was not required to testify. In my debriefing, my attorney stated he quoted some common law. Thank you again for your last-minute help on the Monday night call. I am so fortunate you were able to help. Sincerely, Joanne. Okay. And I'm trying to get straight on which one. Another person asked, I want to know, do you assist with filing a lawsuit against the state?
Well, we teach a course to do that, but we don't have the manpower or the time to be able to do people's cases. And going up against the state is kind of difficult. They love to throw you out on Rule 12 if you're in the federal courts, and all of the states also have their own civil laws so that they can throw you out of the court and deny you justice. So, again, it depends on the case. It depends on how you sue, who you sue. It's much easier to try to sue an individual who has stepped outside of their authority, which may be the case. It's, again, I don't know what the case might be about. So it's very difficult to sue the state in itself. It's very difficult to sue the United States. It's very difficult to sue government agencies. Not that it can't be done, but again, they love to throw you out. I would go after the individuals who are abusing you. And by the way, still there's nobody in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, it's in a one-on-one. There should be a button to enter the queue if you're on an app. Anything else, Terry?
Nope, that's about all I got. Thank you.
All right, any announcements?
I don't have any announcements.
Okay. All right, well, I don't particularly have a topic. Maybe make a few other announcements concerning, for instance, joining our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You know, a week or so ago, I think it was last week, I don't remember, or the week before, we played a video of a sheriff who had a meeting run by the FBI out in Washington. And many sheriffs showed up. I don't know how many sheriffs showed up, but, you know, there are about 3,000 sheriffs in the United States, and they were all invited. We have some serious problems out there, and one of the most important things that we can do is educate our sheriffs. We must educate our sheriffs. So We have a plan here. It's called Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs. So you can find this under Sheriffs on our blue bar and click on our tab that says Join Our Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs. And when you go through this, well, basically I'll read it. Basically it's about buying your sheriff the book Government by Consent. Now, the book Government by Consent is a 550-page book, 8.5 by 11. It's a hardcover book, so it's pretty durable, especially if you use it as a reference book. There's a large chapter in there for sheriffs that empowers them and lays out their powers and authorities and so on. A lot of things that they don't realize. It also gets deep into the common law, which a sheriff needs to know and understand, and it also briefly discusses due process and the importance of a sheriff needing to understand due process. A sheriff should not have to go to a county lawyer or someone, which is a bar attorney, the enemy of the people, the minions of the New World Order. Last thing they want to do is go to them. They need to know themselves. We didn't elect bar attorneys to be our sheriffs. We elected individuals to be our sheriffs, and they should know the law. They should know the Constitution. And if they don't, or they're not willing to learn it, then they don't belong in that office, and we need to remove them if they don't remove themselves. So it's extremely important that people get together in their counties and work this out. Of course, we laid out a program to start a committee of safety. A lot of that information you'll find under Start a Committee of Safety. But let me read this. NLA is working with the sheriffs to organize and educate all county sheriffs led by Sheriff Dar in order to save our republic. But your sheriff, buy your sheriff the book, Government by Consent, and include the two letters below, one from Sheriff Dar and the other one from National Liberty Alliance. You can also include a letter from your county committee of safety. So you can click on the buttons here to buy the book. It's only $39. A book like this, if you go on Amazon and you get a hardcover book of any real value and topical, you'll find them for $60, $70, $80, even over $100 sometimes, especially law books. I mean, we have a law book here, Court Access in the Common Law, everything you really need to know about the common law. And let me just open that up real quick. Everything you need to know about common law and about court access, how to get into it, and so on and so forth, is in this book. And if you, again, this is a law book. It too is 550 pages. It's 8.5 by 11, and it's a hardcover book, and so it's durable, and it's only $39. Again, you go out and buy law books of this type, you'll pay $200-$300 for them, and they'll never give you anything on the common law. We do cover the civil law, equity, we talk about it and we lay out some strategies to deal with those people who are trying to turn your court into a civil law court, or is coming out after you with a civil law court. That's an improper jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction over you, and we teach how to address that particular problem. But we teach you how to write a paper, how to bring the necessary forms together, everything necessary in order to work that out. We also, of course, have an education course, a court access in the common law course. But going back to the sheriff here, buying a book for the sheriff is one of the most important things you could do. If you have it, sheriffs are being warned concerning this problem that's coming upon the United States. I was kind of thinking for quite some time that we weren't going to have to suffer too much here in the United States, but I'm beginning to see and think and realize now that we're going to suffer some problems. It'll be short term, but the people are going to be frightened. Something big is going to happen. There's going to be, I don't want to call it a revolution because it'll be mostly individuals that are not even from America that will be causing these problems. There will be violence in the streets. The cities are all in jeopardy. You got a major problem out there. And many of the small towns and villages that are not too far outside of cities, they're in jeopardy also. But ultimately, everybody's in jeopardy everywhere. There's over 20 million illegal aliens that have come into this country And if you get over the period of time, I've been hearing all kinds of different numbers, but I heard Congress talking about this, and in Congress they brought it up, I forget the individual that brought it up, but said there are 20 million illegals in America today that have come across the border in just recent years. And many of them are young men, military age, and there's a lot of problems coming in. And we're going to have to deal with this problem. And that's exactly what that meeting was all about out in Washington, is to warn the sheriffs that something's about to happen and they need to be prepared. Also, law enforcement around the nation has been notified, but the people have not been notified. We're notifying you, and I'm sure there's other people notifying the people. People need to do something. They need to get ready. They need to prepare for something. The banks are ready to collapse. The food shortages are going to be unbelievable soon. There already are certain shelves still that are empty of certain items, but it's going to get worse. We've all our medical needs, really, you know, different kind of pharmaceuticals and different things are coming from foreign nations, particularly China. China really has a lot of things that supply us with a lot of our medical needs. That's a major problem. So people need to be prepared. People need to be ready to be able to survive 30 days without having to go to the store. Few people can, and it may go longer than that. And we have to be prepared for a lot of violence in the street. That's going to happen. I don't know to what scale, but it's going to happen. Now, we do know that there are plans in order to neutralize this, but the sheriffs need to be woken up. They need to be prepared for this. And again, I don't know how many sheriffs went out to this meeting where all of this information was laid out. But you need to check with your sheriff, see if he's aware of this. What is he doing? Is he gathering together local people for help? Has he been talking to, the police forces, whether they're city police or town police or whatever? Have they been talking with other sheriffs? What are they doing? Well, that's your business. You need to be knowing this. And if we fail to take preparations in this, then we're going to be in trouble. I guess that's all I can say on that. So anyway, everybody should join, join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Get them the book, give them a call, make a meeting, start a committee of safety, follow the process under start a committee of safety, come down to handbooks here, videos and tools, and you'll get a handbook with a step-by-step process instructions on how to start your committee of safety. So committee of safety, organizing the structure of the committee of safety, the charter, organizing handbook, here it is, 66 pages, step by step. And just get some people together and start working on this. If we fail to do this, then we're failing to do the business of the people. We're failing to get involved, to have government by consent. You know, government by consent is an unalienable right, and that's what the Committee of Safety is all about. That's where we should have been involved with this long, long ago. Our parents and our grandparents and our great-great-grandparents should have been involved in this. But this fell away quite some time ago, was robbed by, the powers that be. Ultimately, the Bar Association set the stage. They worked out in Congress and statutorized the committee man and took control of it and set up party bosses, and it doesn't work. And you can't have, and they're limited, you know. My county's limited to 148 people or 149 people, that's it. Whereas a committee of safety, you can have 150 people, you can have 1,500 people. Have as many people as you want. It's an unalienable right to government by consent. And the more people involved, then the more work you can get done, the less workload is on any one individual. Many hands make light work. So if people don't do this and don't exercise their right of government by consent, then you can't complain when you lose your liberty. It's unfortunate that many of us that are doing something, that we have to suffer along with them. But it's up to the people to save America. Trump can't do it. If you're waiting on Trump or somebody to come in and save you, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Trump may be able to do what he's got to do, make a move in the military and give it back to the people. But if the people can't take it and they don't know what to do with it, we'll only end up back here in a very short period of time. Because the hearts of men are desperately wicked, the Bible tells us. Who could know it? And so you're going to have evil step up all the time. Doesn't matter, you can put all these people in jail. Other evil people will step up and take control if given that opportunity. So it's up to you to do something. Okay, we only have one person in the queue, so we'll take that one person right now. But again, anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and if you got an app, if you're on an app, there should be a button to get into the queue. Okay, 517, you got the mic. Go right ahead. From Michigan, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Maybe you're still muted. Hang on a second. Let me try unmuting you here. Okay, you're unmuted now. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. First name.
Dylan. Your name's John, right?
Correct.
Nice to meet you, John. I have a question. So I'm dealing with $10,000 of worth of debt, and I'm starting to learn about, like, the straw man, but I heard they talk about, like, the straw man's a fraud, basically. And I keep getting my bank, they keep giving me letters and phone calls, and they said that I need to pay it. But I'm learning that, like, essentially that's not my debt. And what's the best way?
$10,000 in debt from what?
Just credit cards and loans from two separate banks. It's all consolidated together. It's $10,000 together.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is, you know, look, it's very easy on the one hand for them to come out after you and win in court because people don't know how to defend themselves against them. I would be involved with the straw man. I'd be looking for a contract, an agreement. They don't have that. And usually by the time they come out for you to chase you for these different things, these either loans or credit cards have been moved over to other groups that have no connection with you whatsoever. And so therefore there really is no contract, and that's the key.
Okay.
Court, you're going to want to make sure that number one, that they come in with an affidavit. And we don't care what the bar attorney comes in and swears and that. We don't care. That's all hearsay. That doesn't count. I mean, they make it.
Okay.
If it counts, but it doesn't. So
that's
the situation that you want to be concerned with and careful with. One of the main things, though, is we're going to be going into what the Bible calls a Jubilee period.
It
isn't necessarily being used, but it's going to be the forgiveness of debt. That'll happen after devolution. There's going to be a lot of money that's going to be taken back from these individuals who stole it from the people. And they've been stealing it from us for as long as we've been alive and from our grandparents and our grandparents. So they've been stealing from us for a long time. So everything they have really belongs to us. They control 90% of the world's economy. So just trillions and trillions of dollars involved there. So people are going to be credit cards are illegal to begin with from the standpoint of usury.
Right.
Okay, usury. There's so many different defenses on this.
Right. I've kind of learned that. So you would say maybe the best thing to go about this is kind of like forget about it or write them that letter in that one book, the Meet My Straw Man book, that step-by-step guide. Is that the correct way to go about it?
Well, I wouldn't go anything with the straw man. That's problematic. It's not that it's not true.
Right.
Okay, again, there are people out there
too. Right.
They shouldn't be teaching, getting people in trouble, and all you're doing is putting up the flag to say, hey, come get me. I'm one of those sovereign citizens that they call us, and you become on a list.
Right.
And if they were ever successful in what they're trying to do, then you'd be one of the first ones after to get. Same thing with the people who are going and becoming nationalists. I don't know why people do that. That doesn't make any sense from my perspective. We are citizens of the United States, each and every one of us. The Constitution uses the word citizen 7 times. So we are citizens of the United States. Because we're citizens doesn't mean we're under civil law. We're under Okay, and that common war and the natural common war, the only nation in the world, and that's what we're underneath, under.
Right.
United States, you know, the Constitution gives the United States government the job of making citizens out of people. So if people want to become a citizen, they come to this country, they come in legally, they go through a certain process, and they apply, and they need to take a test, and then they're sworn in, and they become citizens of the United States. And then they decide on where they want to live. If you go to live in
right.
New York, you're a citizen of New York. The next day, you can just pick up roots and go to Jersey, and you can become a citizen of New Jersey. No paper requirements, nothing to do. It's just that's what we are. So we're the people.
Right. So with this situation that I'm in, what's the best way to go about the situation?
Well, who's chasing you? Is it a bank? Is it a collection?
They just want their, you know, their monthly payment, but I'm starting to learn that, you know, it's all illegal and it's all a fraud to begin with, and you know, I'm not really trying to pay them, so I really don't know what to do. Essentially,
well, if you make the decision that you're not going to pay them, then basically you can ignore them until it becomes a situation where they start to, you know, go after you and send you know, collection agencies. They usually sell it at that point. That becomes
right.
a deal. Now, if they come and destroy your credit, and you can have that removed, there is a process. I'm not too knowledgeable on the specifics. I know Gerard knows a lot more about that than I do, and he but there is a process that you can go and challenge these credit reports to have all this stuff removed. They have no power
to right.
do that. That's first of all, it's
right.
you haven't been you know, guilty of anything. But people are ignorant to how things work, and so they allow all these
right.
control of their lives and destroy them.
Correct.
Now, on the other hand, on the credit card, it'll take years before they try to take you to court. You know, they got to go through this whole process. They first try to
right.
for a long period of time. Again, you know, the banks will try first, and they'll push it over to a collection agency. And then at some point, the collection agency usually are run by lawyers. At some point, they may try to take you to court. But that'll be a long way down the road, well over a year. At that point,
we'll okay.
be devolution. And once we get into devolution, all debts will be forgiven. There can be no other way. Because as
Trump
says many times, that when you rob a diamond store and you steal the diamonds and you get caught, you got to give it back. Well, same thing.
Right.
You know, they've robbed the people. When they got
right.
caught, and they're going to have to give it back.
Okay. So you're saying kind of just sit it out and wait and let, you know, this, I know the government's going to shut down soon, and I know the social credit score is coming soon. So really that debt is nonsense because all that's coming anyways, correct?
Well, yeah, you know, and there is, it sounds kind of crazy, but there is what's called the SESQ accounts. That was pushed in, you know, when Congress was debating all this stuff and putting these different things in. And they set up SQ accounts, I think it's called. But anyway, they set these accounts up, and there's a certain value. And when you die, I understand, they kind of seize control of it. They make more money when you die because they make the claim of what do you financially speaking. Now, I know it does sound kind of crazy, but we have looked into a lot of these things, and it is true. This stuff does exist. But the last thing you want to do is try to you know, use that account to try to pay bills and do different
okay.
things.
Okay.
You're going to get yourself in.
Right. So, In the note, it stated that they could do a few things, but from what I'm hearing, what you're saying, that's not really going to happen for a good year, over a year.
Yeah, it takes some time for them to go through the process. There's a lot of people that can't pay their debt. You know, what kind of threatenings are they threatening you with right now?
Well, they said before they said small claims court. And then they could, in the letter they said pay this, or they kind of just said basically like garnish my wages, and they also kind of, they didn't really say specifically, but what I'm kind of understanding, they can, is this true though? They can also come into like another account and take money from another account that I have, or that's not really what they can.
Well, they can't just seize your account anyway. That's unlawful. You have to go through due process to get that. But you do have to.
Okay.
Certain agencies that will do it and get away with it, like the IRS, they do whatever they please. They don't care. They do anything. There's nothing that they won't do.
Right. And I have another question. In that Meet My Strawman book, I think I already stated this. It has step by step directions. Like it needs to be a 2-wet signature, and there's going to be like a third party there, and none of those occurred to either of these bank accounts, so right there it's a null and void, correct?
Well, let me tell you one more time, maybe I wasn't clear. If you want to do that and you want to go to jail, fine.
Okay. Okay, so you're saying that whole book in itself is just total trash.
Well, look, I'm not saying that what they're saying in the book is wrong. Okay, don't get me wrong. Because this
right.
whole that they set up is wrong. There are SESQ accounts. This whole thing, where they deal with us as chattel, livestock.
Right.
And we've been bought
right.
way. We've been sold out. This goes way back into the 30s, I think. And all that does exist. But when you get into that and you start dabbling in that and you start trying to exercise what they did put up for you to be able to get access to, okay, which
okay.
is
like that.
Okay.
Okay.
When you're doing that, you're going to become a marked individual. And I only know one person who was successful in this, and they dealt with over about $100,000. And after they cashed that check and did what they had to do, they broke down his door. It was a federal offense, as a matter of fact, in his case, anyway. And
he was using the straw man thing.
Terrorized his family, his wife, his children. He happened not to be there at the time, and he's been on the run ever since. I don't know if he's ever.
Wow.
I've heard from him from off the road a couple of times, but then that stopped. So I don't know. The thing is you're just flagging yourself for a problem. Don't get lost in that. This is everything that they're doing is a fraud. Fight it in the courts in a legal fashion. Use the Constitution. Use the common law.
You
know, it's very difficult to win in the courts against these people because the whole thing is set up against you. But on the long run, at the end of the day, after devolution, I'm sure you're familiar with devolution.
I haven't heard it. I'm not familiar.
Well, if you're on the phone, so I don't think you can see what I'm doing here, but I can speak what I'm doing here. If you go under internationallibertyalliance.org on a blue bar, you come to today's issues. And if you highlight today's issues, you come down 1, 2, 3, 4 tabs down, and you click on devolution, and that'll explain devolution. Okay?
Okay.
There's other pages in here also that gives you more information. Like Q News and on, there's some more information on that. That'll educate you on what's going on with devolution.
Okay, and then that's the whole like debt relief you were saying earlier.
I'm sorry.
And you stated earlier that's like a part of the debt relief system.
Well, devolution is the military making a move. Military.
Oh, okay.
Taken over by enemies, foreign and domestic. Pretty much
okay.
the Democratic Party, at least on the federal level, you know, we're talking
okay.
particularly in the Senate. They've all betrayed us, and they're all guilty of treason. And from my perspective, they all should hang, but of course they'll get their day in court, and people will decide. There are degrees of punishment for people depending on, you know, even for treason, there's degrees of punishment for that. And also, I would say probably a high percentage of the Republican Party also is part of that process, too. They betrayed us also. The United States
Supreme Court
betrayed us, although maybe there's a move towards doing the right thing lately. But the judiciary is has destroyed our justice system. They've closed the doors of justice. They've abrogated the law of the land. The Bill of Rights no longer exists in the courts. Please. And this goes all the way down into the state level. The state courts also have gone astray also. The only way to save this nation is the military, and Trump has set up a plan, and it's going to be executed this year sometime.
Okay. So, another question. So, I know a little bit about Kamala, not a whole lot, but with the whole debt situation, using common law as a tactic would be a really good scenario.
Well, common law is the law of the land. That's what I use. That's what if you want to learn.
Right.
You know, you can get to education starts here. Come down to court access and the common law. Click on that tab. And then you can get information on this page. The first session of this course is here. You can listen to it and watch it for free. So you get a taste of how it's going. But all the information the course is laid out. And so if you really want to understand due process, how to go into the court, how to file your papers, what papers you need, you know, what is the structure of doing that, all the different forms you need as you go through the process of due process, how things work. It's all explained. And if you want to learn the courts, you need to take a course. This is a course. It's a law course. It's valued, you know, far better than bar course, in my opinion, because they teach civil law. And they don't even teach you the process. That when a lawyer comes out, usually learns from another lawyer by working with another lawyer. They want them to do that so they can be brought under the wing, so to speak. You know, you spend $200,000 plus to get a law degree through them. We have a course that's take that course. Okay, I think we lost the caller. I don't know. I don't see him in the queue anymore. So, okay, we'll take our next call. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? *6 and 1. If you're on, have an app, and I mean, if you're on a phone, and if you're on an app, you should have a enter the queue button. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Let me see. It doesn't look like it's opening mics. Let me try it again.
Go ahead. Hi, John. Hi. I was talking with my mom. I was thinking, should I do like a meet the county event to get to know the county?
When you say get to know the county, you got to explain a little better what that means. I'm not sure.
It means like, okay, do a meet and mingle to get to know what the people of the county.
Well, what you have to find a partner. You want to get at least one other person and start talking about this. And then that one other person with you is two people, and then after time you become 3, 4, 5, and 6, and so on. When you get to be about half a dozen people or more, depending on what you're thinking, but at least a half a dozen people, that's when you want to plan an event. And so you want to then, lay out, figure out a list of different groups within your county that you can make contact with to this meeting. And it'll be really, matter of fact, an example to the kind of meeting you're going to want to have would be on, you'll find it on our front page. Let me get there now. Come down here, you'll see, right here, I think this is it. Yeah, seminar. So you want to run a seminar. You want to do it on a Saturday. Saturdays are the best days to do it, roughly around noon time. And it could be run about 4 hours to do a seminar. Could be run longer, but you want to let the people know it's a seminar. It's going to be about 4 hours. And if you read the handbook, of course, is found under Start a Committee of Safety. You click on Handbooks, Videos, and Tools. And you'll come to that, and you'll click on the book that we were just talking about, which is Organizing Your County Committee of Safety. But anyway, as you're working through this process, let me get back to the page I was on. There it is. Okay, you can click on. Well, I believe you came to the seminar, Ross. I don't remember, but I think you came to the seminar. It was done back in 2021, and it was recorded. And you can click on the seminar here and listen to that. And this is somewhat on how you would run a seminar in your local area. But as far as the handbooks, we also have all of that information, the videos, the PowerPoints, and everything. Here, yeah, your County Committee of Safety seminar instructor, videos and PowerPoint videos. Okay, so everything you need is right here in order to run a seminar. But again, it has to be planned. You want to have at least up to a half a dozen people working on this, coming together and brainstorming it, getting together and thinking about it, finding a venue. The libraries are good. You know, there are lots of different places. We give you a lot of lists, like a library, town halls, rod and gun clubs, a church, a private club, back room of a bar, restaurant, or a diner. You know, any of those places you can have your first seminar. You want to make sure you've got everything you need. You need a computer. You need to make sure that whoever you're using, you've got access into the Internet so that you can connect to that. And you're going to want to be able to, you know, be able to run this, you know, whatever videos and so on and so forth on a screen. Libraries are the best for that because usually they have a whole setup there. You just have to plug in your laptop. Now, between six people, you know, you'll have enough information between the six people to work this all out. At least the technical side. And generally speaking, a lot of technical people out there, once you start getting people together, someone will have some technical knowledge to be able to really work out that part of the stuff. But again, at that seminar, if you invite enough people, you know, you can build up quite quickly to 15, 20 or more people to really start your first meeting. And then from that point forward, you should be able to grow. Once you get subcommittees going, your real strength will come and growth will come when you start to go after school boards, particularly school boards, because you're going to get a lot of parents that will come to meetings. We lay that whole thing out here in our booklets. you'll get a lot of people who will join in with there once they connect with you concerning the problems with their schools.
I said,
but you can't do this alone. You need help. You need to work with
people. I know. I'm trying to figure out ways to reach out to people that I do get two people interested, but it's hard because one is busy and one has eyesight problems like I have.
And again, like I said, it's best to and people could do it if just one or two people if they want to, but, you know, someone's got the ability to work all this stuff out, you know, the technical stuff and everything at the same time, which isn't difficult. I mean, this isn't difficult stuff anyway. But in any event, it's always best, if you got about six people working on the program, of course it's going to come out better because more minds make more focus and more, you know, be able to deal with more problems, figure things out and make better plans. You know, brainstorming is key to all these things.
Yeah, John, have you did like authentication of birth certificate before?
Say this again, something about birth certificate?
Authentication of your birth certificate.
Authentication of your birth certificate. What about that?
You said you went through the process before of getting your citizen corrected.
If you don't have a birth certificate that's authenticated, in other words, that would be accepted, for instance, if you wanted to go to the motor vehicles, for instance, the DMV, and you wanted to get, either a driver's license, which we shouldn't need, but we do need right now, unless you want to go to jail every time they stop you. But in any event, or even just an ID, you're going to need a birth certificate, and a copy of a birth certificate doesn't work. So if you have to have one that's authenticated, one that's real, one that, you know, is...
Here's the original birth certificate.
Right, but you can get a copy, a certified copy of that if you go back to where you were born and go through that process.
Yeah, like the county you were born, I did that. I haven't gotten into the authentication stage yet. That's you submit it to the Secretary of State of the state you live in, or that kind of thing.
Well, let me think about this. My son just did this recently because he had to renew some things, and his and he lost his original. Only had copies of his birth certificate, so he had to go get it. I'll tell you what. If you ask me next week, I'll look to see exactly what the government agency that you have to seek it out with. You know.
Oh, you submit it to the Secretary of State's office of the state you live in. Means.
It may be. That sounds familiar, because I know it's not the county. You're not going to get it in the county,
right? No.
They don't have it there.
That's only notarization of your birth certificate is the county level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not going to be able to get it at the county level. So.
Oh, the birth certificate? Certified copy, yes, you get it from the county, but yes, get the.
I think it's the state. I forget again. I'll if you ask me next week, I'll have the answer, because I'll look through the paperwork that my son went through to see how he did it.
My sister and I just did my birth certificate stuff. Yes, you go to the county to request it, because that's where you're born in. Then that. You will tell me the next meeting.
Yeah, I'll let you know next week. I don't think it's the county. I think it's the actual state. You have to go to the state. I may be wrong on that. Talk to me next week.
I will.
Okay. All right, anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, we'll take our next caller. All right, we only got two people in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue, again, if you're on a phone, *601. If you're on an app, you should be able to find a button there to enter the queue. We'll take our next person. It looks like someone, David, it looks like. Your state? What state are you?
Hi, John. Am I coming through okay?
You're coming in good. Yep.
Okay. Calling from Oakland, California is where I live. The question... about the city next door, Berkeley, I received a traffic citation. It's a relatively minor issue in amount. And on principle, I'm not averse to paying it under certain circumstances. But when on the back of the citation, it states the office hours where business can be transacted, 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. I went down that same afternoon I was cited before closed the business, and they were already closed. They had changed their business hours to close at 2 p.m. It was not correct on the back of the citation. And I went back another time and got caught sideways of that, and I went back a third time. So my complaint is they reached out to me to attempt the contract with me, and they are not flawless in their business. And so I wrote back and disputed the citation with stating that they attempted to contract with me, that they are in violation of they're not complying with the contract that they attempted to initiate with me. And I asked that the citation be dismissed summarily. Is that what are your thoughts along those lines? It's not on the dollar amount. It's on principle.
Yeah, look at all these people out there teaching this stuff. They really shouldn't be doing this. It has nothing to do with a contract. This isn't a contract. It's called fraud, ultimately, is what it is. They're using equity, which is commercial activity, particularly in the state level. But you know, you'll get your ticket in the town usually, or the city, or village cop, but they give you a ticket, and it's a commercial ticket. It's equity, has nothing to do with you, and that's the argument. You go into the court, they don't have personam jurisdiction. Now, once you challenge jurisdiction, the judge is going to say, well, okay, I decided I have jurisdiction, so let's move on. Well, that's not the way it works. You have to understand how to deal with that judge and how to deal with that problem. Generally, we teach this in our course, by the way. Again, under the course, you'll find under Education Starts Here and come down to Court Access in the Common Law course. And we do teach it there. It's quite a long course, though. It's 90 hours, and it's filled with a lot of stuff, a lot of paperwork, a lot of forms, a lot of things there. But we do have a place where we talk about traffic and how to deal with traffic court. So here, I'll give you, for instance, we'll go into the table of contents, which you'll have access to if you take the course. But if you come down here, let me see if I can find this quick for you. I think I should be able to. Cause of actions, motions, forms, referendums, maxims, recapping forms, standards, blah, 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 writs, habeas corpus, jurisdiction, challenge, traffic court argument, right there. Okay, so we have information on the traffic court. We've laid out a paper that you can kind of make work for yourself. You know, you got to make it your own, but it's all laid out. It's like a form almost, but you just take and put your information in it. And what you got to do is challenge the jurisdiction, and you do it formally. And you have to make sure these traffic courts now, they seem to have prosecutors these days. So you got to make sure the prosecutor gets a copy of that. Then they're going to ignore it when you go into court and say, oh, we didn't get that. Well, make sure you have extra copies and the proof of fact that you have sent it to everybody. And if the clerk sends it back, then you advise the judge that the clerk broke the law, and that's a criminal offense, by the way. Your clerk can't remove papers out of the court, and that's 2 years in jail, by the way, for that crime. Of course, you're not going to pursue that, and you may not want to say 2 years in jail to the judge, but you want to make the point that it's a crime and it shouldn't have happened, and that just kind of makes them step back a little bit. You can let them know that they have subject matter jurisdiction, but you're not operating under any commercial activity, so it has nothing to do with me. And if you look at your ticket, you'll find a code. And if you follow that code, you'll find out it's a traffic code. It's commercial. And then you want to make sure you have a copy. You get all that on the Internet, plus you have the paper itself. And you let it be known. You know, you're not under equity. I'm one of the people. I'm under law. You have subject matter jurisdiction, but you do not have personam jurisdiction. I challenge the jurisdiction. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be proven. Again, we teach all this. And once they prove, they got to try now. Now they have to have a hearing for that. And someone on the other side, prosecutor, has to come and prove that they got jurisdiction. They can't do it. So it becomes, the thing is at some point they get frustrated with you, hopefully, and they just throw the case out. Worst case scenario, but it's a good place to learn, by the way, because, you know, the worst case scenario is you're going to have to pay a ticket, which you were planning on paying anyway. Most people do.
All right.
Whatever you want to do, that's how I would go with it, you know. Anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you for your dedicated service.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Again, we only have one person left in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue, star 601 on the phone, and on the app, you should have a tab to hit, to, you know, a button to hit to get into the queue. Take our next person. It looks like Ricardo, right? What state
yes,
are you
sir.
In, Ricardo?
Richard, big guy. I just had a couple questions.
Oh, it's Richard. Okay.
Yeah, I had gotten, you just talked about it. I had just gotten a stupid ticket. It was for $20, Highway Patrol. I was coming off of a three-lane interstate, and then when you come off of one interstate to go to another interstate, you're actually in the lane that's going to take you into off of a street. And at 5 to 6 o'clock at night, there's a lot of traffic. It's hard to get over to the left unless you want to get off on what's called 45th Street. And when you get there, I couldn't get off, so I'm partially on the ramp. And then finally, there was a car behind me. I kind of suspected it was a highway patrol. It was an unmarked one, and because they all have the same vehicle, even though it's unmarked, they look the same. And I could see something in his windshield. So I just got to turn on my signal light. I had it on. I turned on my signal light again and just made sure. I hesitated, and then I went across. It's kind of a Y. It goes off to a Y, to the one side, and to the other part is to the road, to the interstate. And so I went across that and. He was the highway patrol. The car that was behind me, which was turns out to be a highway patrol, he backs off and he lets me go in. Well, Well, then he sped up and got right behind me, and it turns on his lights. And he pulled me over. I said, why are you pulling me over? He said, well, you can't be crossing over that line. I said, well, did I commit a crime? Is it a crime to do that? And then I didn't have my tabs on, but I had them in my pocket, and I showed it to him, and he said, well, he'll give me a warning for the tabs not being displayed for my license plates, and but he gave me a ticket for the... And the way the ticket read, it was kind of weird, unsafe. I said, well, but you were right behind me, officer. You're the one that let me come across. Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, that's one good thing you did about it. So anyway, I just kind of laughed and said, well, give me the ticket. And I was going to just see if it was just worth it just to go into, my question would be, would it be worth just going to the court to see what kind of a court they are? You know, are they a common law? Just to ask questions, I played dumb. And said, I don't know, did I break the law? Did I commit a crime at doing this? Just can't play dumb.
Right, but again, it's a commercial situation. It has nothing to do with you. People go to court all day long. Everybody's guilty, by the way. Everybody's guilty. I have heard on a couple occasions, and I've been in a lot of courts, on a couple occasions where people got off, and not for challenging jurisdiction or anything, but they were able to get off. That is extremely rare. There's no due process in that court. That's one of the big problems.
In a district court, by the way.
A district court?
Yeah, that's what they call it. I'm sending them a ticket.
You in again?
It's a district court.
Yeah, what state are you in again?
North Dakota.
North Dakota. I can't believe it's a district court. I don't understand that at all, because usually it's the town courts, the village courts, the city courts. Those are the courts that deal with that. A district court sounds like a state court. I don't understand that at all.
Yeah, me neither. That's what I was wondering.
I have no idea on what that's all about. They don't have the authority either. But they can't give you a due process because it's a commercial thing to begin with, and it's a commercial violation. And if they can prove that to someone that's driving commercially, then they're going to have to pay the ticket, I guess. But as far
I have no. It's only $20, but I was just kind of curious. Curiosity to find out what kind of a deal it is. But I didn't know what questions to ask. I thought of some things. Well, like I said before, when I started this, I just go in there and said, is this a crime to cross over a line? And the way it reads on here, failure to maintain a single lane or change lanes when unsafe.
They call it a code violation. That's what it is. It's code. And so it's a code violation. It's not a criminal offense. Although they can try to turn some of these things into criminal offenses. They'll, for instance, drive without a license and try to put you in jail with that in some places.
And then if he said, well, yeah, but is this a crime? Really? A crime? Just to cross over the line? And he said, the patrolman was right behind me. How could it be unsafe when he was back there? I figured, well, if anybody's going to let me in, he is, because nobody else would up until that point. And, well, anyway.
Let's put it this way. Anybody who's taken the course, and if they get a ticket, if they feel confident at that point in time from taking the course, it depends on where you are with the course, if you feel confident, then I would challenge it. It's a great place to learn, see how a court works, and they're not courts anyway. They don't operate very well. But to see how some of the process works and how you might be able to defeat it. The worst case scenario, you're going to end up paying a fine. So it's not like you're facing jail or anything. You know?
Well, don't they always charge you court costs too as well, and you add that in?
What I usually do is, if I get a ticket, I send in a jurisdictional challenge. Half the time, I don't hear back from the court ever again. Another half the time, they give me a hard time, and they used to just pay it then at that point, because there's still not the time even to go down there. So, and it depends on where I get the ticket from. But I made a decision not too long ago not to do that anymore. So the last time I got a ticket, I went in and challenged jurisdiction, fought with the judge, and they threw the case out. So, I did threaten them with, in a polite way. I don't threaten directly.
But right.
I'm going to move this. I'm not coming back, I told the judge. I'm not coming back no more. I'm here. I'm under special appearance, which means I'm just testing the validity of the charges to begin with, and whether you have jurisdiction over me, you don't have jurisdiction. I filed the paper, nobody responded. That clerk, your clerk, sent it back. That's a crime. I gave the code number of the crime, and I said, I'm not coming back here. You can dismiss. You can put on another date, but I'm going to move this federal court for cause, and I'm going to sue the court. And that was my position. The prosecutor and the judge talked it over, you know, between themselves, and then they just dismissed the case. So, okay. Again, you know, and again, if they believe you and you come in with a good paper and they scratch their head wondering who you are, they're not going to want to waste, you know, they're not going to want to get in a situation where they have to fight with you in a federal court.
Yeah. The thing I was thinking, it says a request for hearing. I submit the designated bond and request a hearing on the alleged traffic violation and promise to appear at the time and date specified in the summons issued by the court for the county in which the citation was issued. What I was wondering, would there be any value in putting in there that UCC 1-308, preservation of rights?
No, it's not going to help you.
Okay, that's all I wanted.
The only thing that they can that gets you through the process is challenging jurisdiction.
Okay.
And to let it be known, because they're gonna try to decide that they got jurisdiction, and you got to let the judge know. Look, you already believe you got jurisdiction. The law requires once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be heard. So there has to be a case now, and someone has to answer my paper because I sent the paper in and I laid everything out concerning jurisdiction that you don't showing that you don't have it. Now, prosecutor has got to rebut every one of those points by affidavit form, and if they fail to do that. Then I win. Affidavit rules the court, and then they'll play their games. But you know, whatever.
Okay. Next question. Then, thank you. I can go back and play this recording and get that all down. What you said. Is this a good time to buy a house? Because we're thinking about buying one. Mm. Within the Sara thing down the line, maybe, hopefully.
Well, you know what? It may be because it may be a forgiven debt. So it may be the right time.
And even if not, isn't there this, I saw somewhere that you can go and you can challenge this thing because they never keep copies of anything. We were talking about that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, because they go to the Fed window. That's why it'll have to be forgiven, because there is no real, look, here's the problem. Here's the situation. When a bank, let's say you go to a bank to get a loan, they're going to go through Fannie Mae or whatever those other things are. You know, and what ends up, they go to the Fed window for the money. The bank has no skin in the game, so they don't lay anything out. Actually, they're just the agent setting up the loan and making the arrangements, filling out the forms, getting it to the Fed window, getting the approval going, getting the money. You get the money into your account, you go buy your home, blah, 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 blah. You go onward. Okay, so they'll come in and they'll get maybe a point or half a point on the, whatever it is that they get on the loan, and they're done. They're done. Now, They send you this little booklet with all your payments and stuff and tells you how much you're going to pay every month, and they tell you to pay it. People go and they pay it. They don't have to pay it. But, you know, then they're going to go through the process of dispossession, trying to dispossess you. They have a game that's going on. So they'll come in and they'll try to do a non-judicial foreclosure. Nowhere in the country can a judicial foreclosure be legal. They're always non-judicial foreclosures. Either they have these legislative statutes that are laid out on how a non-judicial foreclosure should work, but the key is in the words non-judicial foreclosure. There is really no judicial process. There's the appearance of a judicial process, but there is no judicial process. And they're just going to take you home and they're going to go through the steps. The lawyers come in, they play the game with it. I don't think the lawyers even realize this. I don't think they understand. So, but the whole thing is you're challenging the fact that the bank doesn't have any kind of an agreement with you. They're not holding your mortgage. That came from the Fed window. Generally, when you get to the point when you have a non-judicial foreclosure, whether it be a tax or mortgage, doesn't matter. They're both the same. But once you get to that point, once a certain point comes, what happens is they usually sell this off to a group of lawyers. A group of lawyers will make an investment. They'll pay a few dollars, very cheap. They'll get the paperwork, and they'll take control of the loan, and then they'll come out after you. Well, you don't even know these people at all. They definitely don't have no skin in the game. They can't prove that they have any kind of an agreement with you, and the whole thing is unlawful. It's just a scam. But you have to understand how it works. You have to understand how due process works. Due process is how the court system works. That's what due process is, the filing of a paper, which is an action, not a complaint. If you file a complaint, then you're going into civil law. Right? Just understand that. When they start using the word, well, this complaint came in, his complaint said this, you object. I didn't file any complaint. I'm not complaining about anything. That has nothing to do with me. Complaints are civil law. I'm an action at law. I'm under the common law. So that's where you got to go, and you got to understand these things. And this isn't difficult, but it does take time to learn. You know, you got to digest a lot of this stuff. But basically, look at this whole thing is all about. Again, I wrote a book called Court Access in the Common Law. The book is a good reference book. Okay, we also did the course, which anybody, if you're looking on. On the desktop, you'll see it's open right now. This is basically all the documents and forms we have, and this is the whole class, actually, all the information that we've gone through this course. And so when you go, once you go through all this stuff and you become familiar with it, okay, now when you want to build a court case, you come back to the reference. You reference all these different things that you've laid out once you understand the basic structure. And there is, I think I did a framework here. Let me see. Did I do it here? No, I didn't. Not here. No. But anyway, you go through all this stuff, and it's just really referencing it. Now, the more you write and the more you read other people's cases, and we have lots of cases to read. We have cases in the course that you can read. We have lots of cases here in federal court cases, lots of cases. And if you read through these cases, you'll learn how to write. You learn a lot. You can cut and paste all kinds of stuff out of that. And I try to offer everything not only in PDF but also in Microsoft Word, because if you go and you do Microsoft Word and you cut and paste, then all of the footnotes and everything follow along. But if you are cutting and pasting out of a PDF, the footnotes don't carry over with you. So you've got to cut and paste the footnote also and then tag it into the sentence or whatever it is, paragraph, whatever it is, to get that footnote in there. Footnotes are extremely important. But anyway, it does take some work. It takes some time, and some people can pick it up quicker than others. But due process is simplicity. It's due process is being heard in the court of justice, and so you just have to learn the process, and it's simple and logical. You know, once you see
that was in your book, Court Access and Common Law. Is that the course?
It's in the book, and it's on the course. The course is much more in depth, more specific, and has more information than the book. I wrote the book first, and the course second, so the course has more, and the course is more specific. Follows a little bit of a different process than the book, because it's just the mindset of when I put a book together, looked at it from one perspective. When I put a course together, you know, I looked at it from another perspective.
Okay. Is there any of this information? I did get your book on the government of consent. I got that. That's a big rascal.
Yeah, it's hardcover, and it's pretty cheap, too. It's only $39.
Oh, it was $5 different to get a softcover versus a hardcover.
Yes, yeah, $45 for the soft cover. Yeah.
What the heck? Well, it's actually $40 on Amazon.
Yeah, well, so what happens is, you know, when you write a book, okay, and you get a publisher to publish it, then they take some control of that, and they control the price of my book. They control a lot of stuff, and I was really angry with these people. I was planning on suing them, but I just haven't had the time. Maybe one day I'll go back and sue them. But in any event, they're selling my book for $45. So, but what happens is people who sell books, bookstores, even bookstores online, they'll come and maybe buy 100 books, and they may pay, you know, $20 a book or $15 a book, okay, maybe even less than that. And then they'll sell it for whatever they want. They can sell it for $40, $45, $35, whatever. But my book, me selling it, I could buy books and sell it too, of course, but that's not what I do. I'm not a bookstore. So anybody buying my anybody going online to my publisher and buying the book, they're going to pay the $45. But that's a paperback, and I was disgusted with it. It looked nice when I got it, but really it doesn't hold up. Now, my books are really set for not only reading to understand, but also as a reference. You know, these are reference books at the same time, because you can always go back and look things up rather quickly, go into the table of contents, go to the page, and get all the information you want. Both of my books are that way. And so if you're going to go in and out of a book a lot of times, it starts to fall apart.
Yep. And, well, I usually do a reinforcement right away.
Hardcover book. Huh?
I reinforce my books right away, knowing that that's going to happen. Even I'll get some good quality tape, you know, clear tape, and I'll put over the binder. And,
yeah, I didn't think about that. That's a good idea.
Yeah,
but anyway, I went to Amazon, and I published my book under hardcover, so I had to get another number for the book. And I'm the only one selling the hardcover, so nobody's going to sell it for, you know, whatever prices they want to. I just sell it for $39. It's as low as I can get it to make a few bucks on it. But anyway, I went specifically with the hardcover book because I wanted the last. When I got the copies, I was really impressed by it. They did a great job. It's a nice-looking book. It's solid. It's hot. It's really nice. And you can flip around without the pages falling apart, you know. So,
good heavy stuff, and I looked at the binding and everything, and it's really well done.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so both of my books.
Impressed. Best $40 I've ever spent. And I got free shipping because I'm a Prime member on Amazon. So.
Right. Yeah, I'm a Prime member too. So yeah, you get a lot of free shipping for stuff. So.
Yeah, that's kind of why I was looking at it. I bought some stuff off of the website, NLA website, and it just took me right to Amazon to begin with. So I thought that was kind of weird.
Well,
I'm hoping you guys are getting something out of that.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. You're buying my book from Amazon. I set up an account on Amazon. I'm selling that book on Amazon. Period, and the hardcover book that is. So yeah, I link straight there for the sale. So you just click on the. For instance, if you're on a website, there's a couple of ways to get to my books. But just under the welcome tag, you can click on Books by John Duresh. And when you click on that,
I
have up.
You got a lot of books out there. Gee, you're a busy boy.
Yeah, I got a few more books I need to get up there, but we'll get to it eventually.
Well, the other one I was looking at was that handbook for sheriffs, jurors, bailiffs, and that. Would that
definitely
be a good book
one to get for your sheriff. Yeah, that's a good book for your sheriff.
You know, but I do have the common law book for the sheriff as well. That book by itself. But I thought this other one was pretty good too, because the sheriffs are involved with the courts, you know, the bailiffs and that, and the justice. And you know, you get one of those goofy justices if the sheriff and his staff know the job. Now, I had mentioned I found out here a week ago that our county sheriff, Cass County, it's the largest populated county in the state of North Dakota. The capital is Bismarck. That's kind of out in the center of the state of North Dakota, and where all the good fishing is, by the way, if you want to go fishing. He's the president of the North Dakota, South Dakota County Sheriff's Association, right here in Fargo. When I saw that, I got excited. I thought, man, I just got to get my ducks in order, and I got to get something going, and see if he did get any of that information that was sent out that you talked about earlier. But how would you suggest I approach him on this? Just, I know you said a few things here tonight, but kind of give something tailor-made for Rich Kennedy.
Well, look, if you're building a committee of safety and the committee of safety is all in process, then you want to follow the rules of the layout, the plan that we wrote up to how to approach the state there. If you haven't done that yet, then it's important to get a book to your sheriff now, whether you're starting a committee of safety or not, because we have problems, serious problems, and you want to know what the sheriff's doing, and you want an educated sheriff. You want a sheriff that you can depend on. You know, here in New York, we have a lot of problems with guns. You know, they're trying to take over our permits for guns, which we shouldn't even need a permit, but, you know, we're there at the moment.
Well, same way here in North Dakota, you have to get a permit.
The state wants to take it over. They got rid of, you know, your magazines, anything more like on a rifle, you can't have any more than on a semi-automatic. They think it's 6 or 8. Okay. Wow. And then now they've just... I don't know if they actually got this through the law yet, but they're working on, if they haven't already done it, banning assault rifles altogether. And now, all of that is a problem, of course, because we have the unalienable right to be able to protect ourselves. The United States Supreme Court just recently ruled on this, just the last year on this, and New York is doing whatever they want to do anyway. You know, so the bottom line, I want to talk to my sheriff. Hey, sheriff, if they stop me and give me a hard time, what are you going to do? I'm going to call you up. Are you going to come out to protect me or what? You know, because his job is to protect me from code enforcement officers as much as anything else. They have nothing to do with me.
So if I ask him if you're under oath, I ask the highway patrol officer.
All sheriffs have to be under oath, and the bottom line is, what do you want to do? Look at you may find the sheriff's a real moron. You might find the sheriff has no clue in the Constitution. You might find the sheriff that's going along with the status quo. But that doesn't mean you can't change them, because these people go into the office and they can only know what they're told. They don't learn this from any place else, okay? They just go in and they learn from the government itself, whoever was a sheriff before, and whatever they can find out. So a lot of sheriffs go in and they don't even know the Constitution. See, this book will educate them, give them their powers, their authorities, and their education. And they need it all. And that's why you want to get them a book. Now, the handbook is great. The County Sheriff Common Law Handbook is a great book to get your sheriff. But more important than that, and I would get them both if you, I mean, it's only like.
Yep, five, I do. Yep, I have both of them.
But you want to get them a copy of the book, Government by Consent. And the main reason for this is an entire chapter on sheriffs. It's a large chapter on sheriffs and power and everything. And also the Constitution, common law, how things work. There's a lot of this 550 pages of information that's really the sheriff needs. And the sheriff needs this kind of education. And so buy him the book. And after you give him the book, say, hey, look, I'd like to come down and visit you and talk with you about this book, and maybe get him a copy of the handbook also. I'd like to come visit you and talk with you about the book maybe in a month or two. Maybe we can make an appointment right now. And then you're going to want to read the book and go in and talk to him about different things and then see where he's at, you know. Is he
doesn't pass out when I give him the book?
What was that?
He doesn't pass out when I give him the book?
Yeah.
Where am I going to find a time to read that rascal? I said, just go to the sheriff's section.
Well, it's his job. It's his job to read that book.
Well, yeah.
He doesn't know anything at this point.
So, I find a humorous way of saying and responding to that as well.
Yeah, well, look at that. Some will respond that way, believe it or not.
Okay? Oh, I know they will. Huh?
And they're reacting out of ignorance, just like we have been too. We're ignorant, and we have the choice to not be ignorant anymore because we set a website that you don't have to be ignorant anymore. And I'm sure there's other people doing things. You can go learn things. But the bottom line is the sheriff has a duty to know the Constitution. You know, one of the things I would talk to my sheriff about is, there's no reason for you to ever go talk to a county lawyer, the county attorney, because we didn't hire him to become the sheriff. If you don't know the Constitution and you don't understand how to protect the people and how to protect the people from code enforcement officers and all of these problems that we have, if you don't know those things, then you shouldn't be a sheriff, maybe. Okay? We did not elect the bar attorney of the county as sheriff. We elected you. Because that bar attorney is going to put statutes over the Constitution.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's the problem.
And then, I had another question here, too. You kind of got to that part where I'll ask him, too, if he's had any contact with Sheriff Richard Mack. I don't know if those guys would have contacted every sheriff. Now, you said something earlier, there was that meeting out in California. They invited all the sheriffs in the nation.
Out in Washington, D.C., as a matter of fact, we put this up on our front page. You might want to watch it if you haven't watched it. Let me get to the front page here.
Okay.
On our front page, I put up the video. I think I put the video up that we had just recently. Let me see. Maybe I didn't. The line in this there. No. I know I put it up somewhere. I just don't remember where, but it is on Rumble. Let me see if I put it under today's issues.
On Rumble, what would be the file name of it? You know, John Duresh?
Well, no, National Liberty Alliance.
Okay, so you have something on Rumble there too? Okay, that's good.
Get to our Rumble page right here. Let's see, YouTube Rumble. Okay. Now, on our Rumble page, we have a lot of Bible studies also, because I've been doing Bible studies and
okay,
we'll be moving into the book of Matthew next week. But this week we'll be I think we're going to be finishing up this week on the book of Revelation. But here's a meeting that we had here with SGNON and National Liberty Alliance. But we did post our last meeting. I'm looking for it right now. Here's 1 in 23 that we had. Goodness, I'm not seeing this. Let me try it another way. Okay, yeah, oh yeah, it is this one. 24/2/19 NLA call. Okay. So this was a meeting we had last week, okay, and in this we had a sheriff talking. We played a video of the sheriff talking. Let me see if I can find get to the place pretty quickly. It takes a little while. But let me go back to where we were before anyway, just to show you that it is here. If you come to our page and you click on Rumble, subscribe to Rumble, okay, you come here. This is the meeting, I guess, that we had. No, this is SGNN. It's not popping up in the beginning right here. I don't know why. This is a meeting we had last year. All right, well, anyway, you can find it here. Let me give it to you. I'll put it up on the website. Okay, this is it here. Just go on and put in 24/2/02/19. That's the date, NLA call. And you go to Rumble, get to my page, and search that out. Okay, but we did. I did post it up on the website. I just don't remember where I put it, to be honest.
Okay, all right. Now, will this be listed on?
But that was a meeting. That was a meeting in Washington, D.C. It was a meeting the FBI called, and all the sheriffs were supposed to go out to this meeting. I don't know how many showed up, and they were giving them information concerning problems with potential uprisings throughout the entire United States, especially in the major cities.
Oh, well, the sheriff had mentioned the reason he wanted to get on that program, and it's a local radio station. Jay Thomas is his name, and he gets some good to be. You can call in and get people to appear to it, and I thought maybe that may be a place for you guys to get on, for one of you to get on to.
We always ask for people to try to find us places where we can have interviews if people want
okay.
to.
Okay. So what I do? I'm gonna go talk to him. But I wanted to talk
yes,
to you first.
Make the contact and get them in touch with Jan. Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org. That's JAN at nationallibertyalliance.org. If you make contact with these people, send an email to Jan. Give him your phone number, tell him he made some contact with whoever, and ask him to give you a call, and he'll connect with you, and then he'll take it from there to set up an appointment for me to have a interview with whoever.
Oh, that would be great.
Anybody else out there that can get me an interview, interviews are important in order to get the word out. We're trying to get...
have him get a hold of Jan. I'll send the information to Jan. Is that what we're doing?
Yes, send the information to Jan and give him your phone number so he can give you a call and chat with you for a few minutes just to make sure they got everything connected right. And then
the local station is only a couple miles away from me here, and there's actually three of them. And there's another really popular program. It's called What's on Your Mind by Scott Hannon. He and what's his name from Fox News, Sean Hannity, they were good friends. And Sean Hannity had been here in Fargo a few times. When Sean Hannity was on with that other guy, that other wacko leftist guy.
Hannity and I forget the guy's name.
Yeah, Hannity and Combs was the name of it.
Combs.
Hannity and Combs. And Hannity was there. I talked to Hannity. I said, what do you think? He said, the guy's a nut. But, you know, I just have a lot of fun, you know, jabbing back and forth with him. But he said, the guy's not all there. And Scott Hanna was there big time. He was big time overweight at that time. And then he did some things, and now he looks like a normal guy. And he was fun to talk to. They had an open house here last fall for the new radio station. And I talked to him a little bit about it. He wrote a book, too. I got a hold of that, and I was looking at it. And he said, I asked him, would you like a book report back? And what I think of it when I get back to it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go in, hey, John, I want to give you my book report, and I'm going to hand him a different one. I said, I want you to read this one, and I'm going to give him this National Liberty Alliance, one of those things, and then kind of get on it. But he's got a really popular program. It's like a 3-4 state area that broadcasts over Minnesota, North Coast.
If you could make preliminary contact with them first so we can get basic information so that Jan will have direct information to call, see if they're interested, and then say, I'll pass it over to one of the leaders.
And that one thing about Sean, he does how can I say, read up about you, whoever's guests are going to be. You know, if you got a book, he'll read it, and he'll get informed. He'll know what he's talking about. And the thing I thought, God, if we get enough people, and then if we could get the sheriff on the program as well. Here's the thing: why he was on the program. They're bringing in hundreds and hundreds of illegals into North Dakota. Every state is getting
thousands across the line. Well, millions.
Yeah, well, I know. I'm just using that. He said there's just, when I say hundreds and hundreds, and they're bringing them in. And what he's asked the citizens of the state to do is to keep an eye out for these things. You know, they're putting them in a different place, like barns and old abandoned houses and stuff, and they're just causing them all over the place. And nobody seems to be really saying why they're doing all this stuff, but I think you touched on it earlier. It's to start a revolution from inside. And you know, there's 87,000 IRS agents. Well, maybe that's what they're going to call them. They're going to arm them.
No, those 87,000 or 90,000, whatever that number is, those are the Obama kids. I don't know if you're familiar with the Obama kids. We have a video on here on the Obama kids back when Obama was president. So we were back in like 2015 or 14, 13, maybe even 12, even earlier than that, maybe even 10.
Those 87,000 people that they were supposed to get funded for, is for that?
These Obama kids have been trained as militants right in their schools.
Okay.
We've got videos of this, and they sing into Obama, and they're carrying rifles, and they're doing all kinds of things. Okay, now all these kids are in their 20s now. So they were priming them and preparing them for something, and that's the IRS agents. They want to...
I knew it was something like that.
From IRS agents.
And I wonder if that's what a lot of these other ones that they're bringing in even now, just more backups.
Well, that's militant. That's a whole different story, you know. So that, but remember, there is a plan to deal with those people, and
yep, that's
like we don't know where they're at. We know where they're at. Remember, they didn't come in totally armed, but they have to be armed, and they have to be given certain things. They'd be given a phone. So at some point they'll be contacted and told what to do, where to go, and that's when we'll get them.
There's always a method to their madness. The sheriff was also talking about wanting people to kind of keep an eye. He said, don't get involved. Just let us know where you see it, and don't even confront them or anything. But just they just want to know where they are, where they're going to. But he's going to need people. Okay, so that leads me to the next one. This militia course that Brent Winters is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to get people to sign up for it, and they'll say yeah, but they don't. But I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to get 10 people, and I've been doing it now. Would you be interested? Yeah, I would. Okay, I'll tell you what. Is it okay if I give them, I get your name and your email, and I'll put you on the list, and then I'll pay for it, and then I'll bring the book when I get that, and I'm going to bring it to you. That's how I'm thinking I'm going to do it, because waiting for people to do something is like waiting for paint to dry.
Well, you got to be careful, because look, when you give people for free and without their energies.
No, it's not going to be for free. I said, but will you pay the $20? And mm-hmm. So I'll do it right now. Just I need to get people on the list, because I want to get going on it. And I just want to get 10 or more people to do it. And last week I asked, they said, well, yeah, you can keep adding people onto the list even after you got the one you have. So that's what I was kind of encouraging about.
On that program, Sheriff Dar is on with Brent. And Sheriff Dar, really, he kind of inherited into the right place of as a sheriff, and they've been doing things right, I guess, there for a while. Sheriff Dar, I guess, also learned a lot from us, and he met Brent through us, I think, and so he's become very, very educated, and he's got people that he's been training as posse. Under Posse Comitatus, and they.
Now, is that what that militia thing's all about? You know,
well, that's what the sheriff should be doing. You know, we
right.
should be handing ourselves over. This is one of the things we teach. Look, we have a handbook for militia. We have here, for instance. Let's see if I can find this sheriff's militia code, rules, and resolutions. Okay. Now, this is code, rules, and no. I worked with Brent Winter to put this together. But I know we have a handbook on this, too. Let me see where the handbook is. Militia code rules and, okay.
Is that the book they would get when they sign up for the course?
No, this is something we put together.
No, I mean, the militia thing does say there's going to be a book that they're going to get, and then I have to, you know, whoever organizes the group has to give it out.
Yeah, I think he's already written a book on this, okay. But I did work out this thing here for reserved militia of the several states, and it's very short, okay, but basically it's a lot of resolutions, what's resolved as you create this militia. But we do connect that also to the Committee of Safety, because ultimately You know, some people want to go right away into the militia. You can't do that. That's too dangerous, especially in today's environment. And you got to really know what you're doing. You can't be haphazard. You have to be well organized. You have to have numbers so you're protected, and you have to have the sheriff on board. So what we're doing is we're teaching the people to create the committees of safety. Now, at some point, you know, everybody in a committee of safety is part of the militia. Okay, it doesn't mean that everyone has to be able to bear arms and be able to go out and do something physically, but everybody can do anything. I mean, a person in a wheelchair can even help. It doesn't matter. Anybody can help. Okay, it's just that wherever you can be available to assist. But the militia ultimately is the people. Here in New York State, if you go into the Constitution, New York State Constitution, it says that every person, I think over a certain age, 18 or something, whatever it is, but every person over the 18, that is their duty to protect and be called if necessary to protect the borders of the state of New York. Okay, so everybody is part of the militia, all right? And so when you create a committee of safety, the committee of safety is all part of the militia. At some point, you know, you resurrect that point. But education has to be first and foremost. And you can't just jump into this thing. So what Brent is doing is he's running a course. It's a good course in teaching people the basics and the information, all the deep details. And I know he's already written a book on this, so maybe he's offering that book up at some point. So all of that should be good.
Okay. Good. Lots of stuff.
All right, let me go to our next caller. We've got one other person in the queue. So if anybody else wants to get into the queue, again, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and if you have an app, then there should be a button to enter the queue. All right, thanks, Rich. Okay, next caller, Marianne, how you doing? You got the mic.
Hello, yes, this is Marianne. And first of all, thank you for hosting these weekly meetings. You guys have been very dedicated and consistent with it. Appreciate it. Other thing, the one caller who was talking about straw man stuff, I would recommend not wasting time and money on that process. I do believe it's all been shut down over the past few years. It's really not. I could think it was a thing, but now
it's never been accessible. They put it all to appease the people. Back in the 30s, they made this whole plan, and they have to appease the people. They put certain things. They set up the SESCU accounts and so on and so forth. They put the cap letters and all that stuff, and we've now become chattel in that process. They sold out the people, and they've sold us as chattel. And when you die, there's a SESCU account, and the government will come, I guess the IRS or whoever, they come in and they seize the property. So that's just another way for them to make money also. They seize that money on this SQ account, wherever that comes from. Who knows? I don't even know. But the thing is that it's all true, okay? I went through this whole process myself with Gerard and I in the beginning trying to figure things out. Mm-hmm. But we discovered that it was problematic. It is all true, but it's not... you're not going to be able to execute it without getting yourself in trouble and on a list. I'm telling you. Anybody dabbling in that stuff who's putting themselves in jeopardy. And these people should not be teaching this stuff. And they claim all these successes. I'm telling you, they don't have these successes that they claim they have. Successes are far and in between, you know?
And there may have been at one time, but I don't believe any of that anymore.
I don't think that they ever paid out without coming out to arrest you after.
Yeah, to get their restitution. The other thing was, but people can go to the TD, the Treasury Direct account. You can go to treasurydirect.gov, I think it is, and then go and look at bonds, go to the bond valuation, and enter your Social Security number and the date, the month, and the year of when, like around your birthday or whatever, when it was, when that was executed.
Recorded?
Yeah, when it was recorded, yes, when your number was given to you. Then you can, and you put it in as an EE or an E depending upon the year, like before 1980, after 1980, kind of thing. So you can look at your driver's license and your Social Security number, and then if you do have whatever documents you have, you can look it up, any like government-issued documents, you can look up the number, and you'll find it. You will find it, and you'll see the valuation, but realize that that money's way been spent a lot. Like, that money was spent a long time ago. I think that's why the, you know, people like the banking families like the Rothschilds are sued by the U.S. government and being basically dismantled and in military tribunals for doing what they did with the Federal Reserve and setting us up as chattel and all the things that they did to the people, because basically they believed that they owned everything and everyone, so they could do whatever they want with humans, you know. I'll just keep it at that. But yeah, so it's already, like, it's done. There's an archive. You can go through and see these things, but it's finished. It's done. So,
well, you got to be careful though, because there's a website out there that's called Before It's the News, and a lot of people get their information from that, and they've said a lot of things that are not true out there. And so I think that might be really the enemy. There's a lot of claims that a lot of people have been arrested, and this has happened, and that happened, and I have no clue whether any of that is true. And I kind of think that most of it is not true, but I really don't know. At some point in time, it's all going to be true, but right now, I don't know. When it comes to that straw man thing, the bestseller of the straw man handbook is out there. It was done by a guy named Robinson. Now, Robinson came onto our site some time ago, and he started to take down the books that we've given for free, which I've also put up on Amazon as handbooks so that you can buy them if you want to buy a handbook. But all our handbooks are for free. You can download them in PDF form right on the website. Okay. But what he did is he downloaded some of our books and then went and started selling them on Amazon. Now, he also the straw man book, and he's got a lot of books up there on Amazon, and so he's got this book on the straw man, and I don't know where he got that from. He probably robbed that from someone else also, but he's in jail now because the IRS came out after him, and he had a partner, and they're both in jail right now. So I would not get involved with that straw man business at all. I'd stay far away from that. If you want to fight these people, take them, learn how to go to court, take them to court and fight them and call them the fraud that they are. You can lay it out how they're a fraud, but you got to be careful how you do that also, because you want to look, get into the straw man business stuff. You know, you have to deal with the facts.
Yes. And, but yeah, I agree. It's not a good thing. And the other thing was, I know I did mention, I did send a letter to you guys, an email about the development being UN World Economic Forum, and what it is a top-down control structure that's in place, and it runs through FEMA, kind of controls the different regions, FEMA regions, economic development regions, state economic development .gov, and then there's the NGOs that are related to it that are at the county level, and then there's like a quasi-governmental agencies and stuff. Like, it's they've created a massive network within the United States.
And it goes all the way down to the villages and towns.
Oh, absolutely. My thing is, see, this is where it's up to we, the people, to say, you're out of here. You don't belong here. You're not one of us. We don't want you. We don't need you. And you're out of here. They actually have them convinced in Indiana at the commissioner's level, they actually have them convinced that they're powerless. And I just looked at them, and I'm just, like, flabbergasted by this, because like, well, you're elected officials, and we need to get rid of the election machines in our county. And he said, well, that decision is way above us or something. And I went, no, that decision is not above you. That's what you're elected to do. You know, mm-hmm. You don't have to use election machines. We can go paper ballot only in our county. And I think that that's what we should do. We're a small enough county. We only have about 50 to 60,000 people in our county. So we're small enough where we can set something up fairly quickly, you know, to be paper ballot. But
it doesn't matter where in America you are. First of all, every election district is set up with a limited number of individuals within that election district. That's far, you know, when they create the districts, they only have so many voters within that system. And usually, generally speaking, it might be something like 300 or 400 people in each party, for instance, okay? And of them, not all those people would even vote anyway, but let's say it's 600 people in an election district. Let's say 400 of them are voting, or 300 of them are voting. Well, each one of those machines is a representative of each one of those machines that are set up. If you go, for instance, down to some places, they'll do it in firehouses, some places do it in the town hall, whatever, wherever they set up the voting. And when you go down there in your election district, you might see 4, 6, 8, 10 different machines that you go to vote on, depending on, they'd have so many machines depending on how many people are in that election district. But there's a lot of election districts. Each one of those machines represent an election district, okay? So it's nothing. It is absolutely nothing for them at the election level right there to make a counting of the votes and then send it upline. And if the committee men were doing their job, which they're not, and we the people through the committees of safety can do this job, because it is our job, it's an unalienable right of ours to be able to protect our elections, we can go down and make the certifications to confirm the fact that it was counted properly. We can watch the counting of the votes, and we can certify it also. Now, people need to get involved to do this. But the point is this, is that if they're counting them on the election district level within the towns and the villages and even the cities, and the cities are broken up into parts also, but if they're counting them on the grassroots level right there, it shouldn't take any more, at the most, a couple hours to make the counting of the votes. So if they close up at 9 o'clock by midnight, they definitely would all be finished counting and sending all their results up to the county level, and the county setting it up to the state level so that they can come up with the conclusions of how the votes went. But what they're doing now, and they've been doing this for quite some time, is they don't count them at that level. They sent all this information to the county level. So you have all these towns and villages. For instance, here in Dutchess County, where I live, we have 19 towns, I believe, two cities, 19 towns, and then, of course, lots of villages inside those towns. And I don't remember how many villages we have. So all of that, all of those, and every one of those areas, a village has many election districts. Towns have a lot of election districts, so on and so forth. So all those election districts, all those ballots, all that information is sent to the county. And then the county pulls all these people to make the counting, and that's where the cheating takes place. And that's the problem.
That's fine.
That's the problem.
Yeah, and they made it here in this county where I am in Indiana, Jasper County. They made it so that everything's so electronic that you can go anywhere to vote. You don't go to a set place.
Well, look, the whole thing was set up to cheat. You know, when I was young, I was 18 years old, and I wanted to vote, and I tried to figure out what I wanted to be, Democrat or Republican. Nobody could answer the question because I didn't know the difference. I finally figured it out, and they said, well, I'm a Republican because it's the law. And that's what the Constitution says. Not that I had much knowledge back then. I didn't. I just happened to fall into that. And so I became a Republican. And they're just as lost as Democrats, too. But at least there are some decent people, generally speaking, in the Republican Party. But I'm sure there's a few in the Democrat, too, party. But the people have been snookered by these people. They've taken control by these people. And the whole thing is really set up to rip you off. You go down, if you go to the government for anything, If you go to motor vehicles, or you go for food stamps, or you go for welfare, you go to any other government program anywhere, they force upon you almost a voter's registration. They want to get people to register. They don't care if you vote or not. They just want you registered because the whole thing is set up for cheating, because then they'll have people go out and vote in your name. And that's how this whole process works. I was involved with the Committee on Process for quite a few years and involved with, of course, getting the walking, the list for the walking within certain different election districts. And all these lists, they have people that are no longer living there, still registered. They got people who died and still registered. And this must have, if people don't vote for a certain period of time, I think it's 2 or 3 presidential elections, they're supposed to fall off out of the system, okay? But they don't do that. So they have all these, that's how they've been cheating all this time, is they got all these people who don't vote, all these people who are dead, all these people who have moved out and they're voting somewhere else, but they're still registered here, and they come out and vote in their names. And that's how they win all the time.
Yep, they never remove them from the voter rolls.
Yep, that's right. The problem. So. Yep. All right, what about coming to the end? Anything final?
No, thank you. That was about it. And I had called. Oh, I mentioned about the tolls, the toll bills that I had received, and I called them about it because I called them to try to set up a court hearing because I was really, really curious. I want to know where the court was located. Turns out there was something out of...
Are you talking about receiving a ticket from driving past a toll and they sent you by mail, or you got a camera picture of a ticket or something like that?
Yeah, they sent a camera picture and they sent it to me, and they tossed all sorts of fees, and I was just really curious as to what they were going to do next and where things were located. And it turns out there was something in New York. There was something like in New Jersey. I mean, there were addresses all over the country, basically, with this place.
So well, you got to watch out with these toll things because they charge a fortune, and if you call them up and you make an argument, you get them reduced down quite low. They're breaking the law because the ticket, you know, the toll might be $1 or something, and they're coming out after you for $30,
mm-hmm.
and that's unlawful. They can't do that.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
A lot of people pay that money. They just pay it off, and they don't have no problem. They go to the traffic courts, and they just pay the tickets and, just don't say and don't care about it. I don't know.
Yeah. It's not, I always push back on everything. So, but yeah, I called them and asked them, like, where are you located? Just wanted to know where they were because are you even in Illinois or are you in, India? I have no idea. So I still don't know where they're really located. But I was told that the court is in Cicero, and I know where that is in Illinois. But I've stopped receiving the bills. Since that phone call, I haven't received anything. And it's been 2 months. So, But anyway, just thought I'd let you know that. And
all right, well, we have someone else who's came in the queue. I want to try to take them before we close down. It's 11 o'clock, so. But,
okay, great. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Thank you. All right. We'll take our last caller. Only got a couple of minutes. Maybe give us your first name and your state. Someone that just came into the queue, 832 number, first name and estate. You've been unmuted. Maybe you're muted on your side. We're not hearing anything.
Can you hear me?
We got you. Hello? Now. What's your first name? What state you're
in? This is Anthony from Texas.
Okay, go ahead, Anthony.
Yes, I had called last week. You told me to call you back this week to update you on if I contacted the lawyer to see what the next steps was with the trial case coming up.
Right, I remember.
Yeah, so he haven't gotten back with me. I'm scheduled to see him tomorrow to concerning everything. So I'm not able to give you no info today.
All right, yeah, well, next week, give us the info, what you got. I'm really interested to hear what he says because, you know, again, most lawyers are brain dead. They should know these things, but they don't.
And I was just sitting back thinking that this guy had my best interest in hand and, you know, thinking that he was working.
Lawyers have only themselves best interest. They don't have your best interest. Trust me, they'll sell you out in a moment. They'll sell your mother out in a moment. That's not a joke. Let me tell you about lawyers.
I know that now.
Lawyers first obedience to the court before to their own client. Remember that. That's a problem.
Yes, sir. Yes, I noticed that now because I actually looked over. You remember I told you that the guy did an affidavit letting them know that it was his gun or whatever, and he went to my lawyer to get it done. And I guess he must have asked the lawyer to write it up for him, and I finally looked over the affidavit, and the wording that the lawyer used is enough to sink me itself. Because he put some stuff about I knew that the guy carry and that I help him carry his tools when we go to the job sites and that I know that he carry a gun. And I told him that I have a criminal history, so I can't be around.
Knowing that he carries a weapon doesn't make that a crime for you anyway, number one. And knowing that he carries a weapon doesn't mean knowing that he left it in your car.
Oh, okay. Because
what you got to get, you got to go get this individual yourself and sit down and work out an affidavit together with him, and get that true affidavit into the court. And let me tell you, this lawyer again. You know, remember what I told you. In order for there to be crime, number one, there's got to be injured party. There is no injured party. Okay. Also, in order for there to be a crime, there must be intent. There is no intent. You got to prove intent. They can't prove intent. Also, you have an affidavit. Affidavit rules the court. Your affidavit, between your affidavit and the other affidavit, that rules the court. What affidavit do they have on the other side? Even when, if you look at these police reports, that's not an affidavit. They'll sign it and swear to it, but it's not certified, so it's not an affidavit. It holds no weight in the court. But these things go through all day long. People have no clue, and I don't think lawyers have a clue to begin with, or they just don't care. Look, they just want to be paid. That's all they want. And I say that absolutely with knowledge because I've dealt with enough of these people. They just don't care. And remember, look, first of all, they come out of school when they're 18. They go into college, and they've still got mush for minds, okay? They're still being formed. And then they are indoctrinated when they come into this, school, the bar schools, okay? They got 2 years and sometimes more. They go to school, and they totally indoctrinate these people. And they don't teach them anything about the truth. They don't teach them anything about the Bill of Rights. They don't talk about the Constitution. They don't talk about the common law. All they talk about is the civil law and how they can make money. And then they go and they take a third of, I mean, that's ridiculous too, getting a third of your money when they fight a case for you. All that is just a bunch of BS, and it's all about money, 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 money. That's what it's about. It's sickening.
Yes, it is.
But with it's late, so I'll give you a final minute of that.
Okay, no, I was just wanting to know some valid things that I could ask him to,
well, that's
you know,
the key,
to...
That's the key thing that should shut that case right down. In order for there to be crime,
okay.
The party, number one. Number two, intent. Where's the intent? Number three, affidavits rule the court. You got an affidavit, and you got to get that affidavit fixed. And you should get onto your case about the language of this. And you should talk to the person that had the gun to make sure that they write a proper affidavit, rescind that one if they have to, if he's already put it in the court. You should let your lawyer know, don't put that affidavit in the court. It's going to sink me. Why would you put something like that in there? You know, there's no reason for that person to put into the affidavit anything of your knowledge of what you know about them carrying a weapon. Okay, that's no one's business. If they're asked, they should tell the truth. But just because you know that they carry a weapon doesn't mean anything. You know, so
yes, sir.
Just logic. Logic should rule the court. Common sense.
Okay.
That's what common law is common sense. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Yes, thank you. Appreciate
all right.
It.
Thank you so much. Yes, sir.
Okay. Have a good night. Thank you. All right. We'll come to the end of our program, and Lord willing, we'll see everybody next Monday, and we'll pick it up from there. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.